Hi, I'm Andrew Keith Walker.
Hello, I'm Barbara Reith.
Hi, I'm John Kernan.
Hi, I'm Laura Rodriguez.
Hi, I'm Nick Bruce.
Hi, I'm Laura Gibson.
And this is the number one regulatory reporting podcast in the EU, the UK, and around the world. So join us as we go behind the scenes and under the hood to look at the big issues and news stories, companies and personalities who are shaping the world of RegTech, FinTech and trade repositories. Welcome to the RegisTR Roundup. Welcome back to the RegisTR Roundup. Yes, it's July already. Wimbledon is over and Q3 is here already. Can you believe how fast the year is passing? And joining us back in the virtual studio, we have a full house today because we have a very special guest joining us. I'll be coming to that in a moment. But first of all, let's say hello to the team. Welcome back, Laura Gibson, the show producer.
Delighted to be back and nice to be back when everyone's home from their holidays.
And also a very, very special welcome back to someone who's been away on honeymoon. Yes, it is, of course, the nicest and most efficient person in the organization, the head of client services, Barbara Ruiz Alonso. Barbara, welcome back.
Hey, Andrew, you're welcome. Thank you very much. And yes, I can show you. You can see my new shiny ring after so many years, you know, with my ex-boyfriend, new husband.
Congratulations. Finally, you made an honest man of him. Good for you. We knew you'd do it. And of course, someone who I'm sure was, you know, your maid of honor at the ceremony and is, of course, very much the important central figure in our institutional relations team. It is the head of institutional relations, of course, the pride of Spain, Laura Rodriguez. Laura, welcome back.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Good to have you back as well. And so Barbara escaped the heat wave. How were you doing? How did you get through the 40 degree temperatures?
Well, you won't believe it. I escaped the heat of Madrid to go to the heat of Vietnam because I was there for a few days. And yeah, I really recommend to visit Vietnam, but not in June or July. Really, it was really, really, really hot.
I'm guessing you swapped the lovely dry heat of Spain for the humidity of Asia. That's getting hotter.
So now I think I'm not going to be hotter anymore in Spain.
Next summer, I recommend you go and see the NCA in Iceland. Head that way, head up to Sweden, keep going north. Get Finland participating more actively in SFTR and, you know, you can spend every summer there. That'll be a really good idea. Of course, joining us as well, the man who, you know, is in Devonshire but is never square, is the CEO of RegisTR in the UK, Mr. John Kernan. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Andrew. I am actually in Devonshire Square today. Sat here with Nick.
That's very exciting. Wow, you see, now it's post-COVID. We're actually allowed to meet one another again. And that's very exciting. So you've come over from Luxembourg. What's brought you over to the UK this week? In addition, obviously, to seeing clients, is it an event that you'll be speaking at?
No, we've actually our UK Board of Directors meeting tomorrow. But as you said, we've also a number of client meetings lined up as well.
Okay, so you've got a busy week, and sitting next to you there in our Devonshire Square offices is, of course, the voice of reason himself, the head of business development, Mr. Nicholas Bruce.
Hello, Andrew. Hello, everyone. And yeah, I have John with me in Devonshire Square. We've got a week full of meetings because we've got a board of directors going on. We've got obviously meetings around it. And I think this morning, the first thing I had to do was Google how to do a tie-up because it's been so long since I've worn a tie. I think I'd forgotten. It comes back.
For the people at home, by the way, they are all looking very, very smart in Devonshire Square. In Madrid, everyone just looks chilled out and stylish. In Devonshire, they look like they're appearing in court this morning because they've got 12 points on their license for speeding. Nick, by the way, we've got some big news, haven't we? Because this is the week that you've announced a new partnership for RegisTR.
Yes, we're pleased to announce that the guys at Regnology have joined our partnership program, which is fantastic. We've known the team from work with the team for a long, long while, but they're formally joining our partnership program, which is great news.
That is great news. A big shout out to Alexander Becht there, a former guest on the show, and we'll be looking forward to getting him back on to talk all about that. But that is enough of the introductions right now, because we have got a very, very special guest. And joining us, it is, of course, the CEO of BME and the head of Securities Services Business Unit at the Six Group, Javier Anani. Javier, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I'm taking your advice of going north to avoid the heat. So I'm in Bilbao today, but it's not enough. And I have to say that Zurich is not enough either. I was there for 2 weeks. It was even more hot than Madrid. So there's no shelter here.
And it must be nice that in Bilbao, of course, you were the deputy director of the Bilbao Stock Exchange for many years there. So is that a home from home?
It is a home from home. And the most important thing is that from here I can see the sea, which is part of my life completely. You know?
Well, that's a good thing. Now, of course, we're getting into the conversation now, and that means our compliance folks, their red phone will be ringing because we haven't read our disclaimer yet. Now, this is a financial services podcast, and anything could happen in the next 30 minutes. And we are very honored to have the CEO of BME, which is, I think, probably the highest ranking official, one of the highest ranking officials we've ever had, to read this out for us. I'm going to fade up the inspirational corporate rock music and hand over our disclaimer to Mr. Javier Anani. Over to you.
Okay. This podcast is sponsored by RayStr. It features members of the RayStr team and special guests offering their personal opinions, not the opinions of RayStr as an organization. There is no representation made as to the accuracy or completeness of information in this podcast, and it's not intended to be taken as legal, tax, or other professional advice.
Yay! Excellent. First time. First time. Another first timer. Tim Hartley's got some fun. So, Javier, I want to start looking at that sort of big picture, really, because you've got a stellar career. I mean, prior, obviously, to being the CEO at BME and joining the Six Group, you spent 15 years as the CFO and then the Director General at BME. Prior to that, as we've already mentioned, you were the Deputy General Manager at the Bilbao Stock Exchange. And of course, also naturally, you hold advanced degrees in European Studies and Business Administration. It just sounds like you're showing off now, to be honest with you, on your CV. That's very impressive stuff. But of course, this means you have seen through a period of profound change in the European sort of securities marketplace from, obviously, 2008 and the financial crisis through Basel II. We've got a long list of acronyms, actually, that you've had to navigate through. We've got Basel II, SFTR, CSDR, MiFID. We've obviously got UMR as well. EMIR, then, of course, we've got EMIR refit on the horizon. We've got MiFID II, UMR Phase 6. It's all coming thick and fast. How has that been? How do you steer an organization working in the securities and pre-trade and post-trade sides, as you've got all that experience in a major custodian? How do you steer through that kind of disruption over such a prolonged period?
I think it's one of the longest questions I've ever had in my life, Andrew, and it will probably take hours to answer. But I think in my, as you say, my CV, or as the British say, my criminal record is, I think, is enough to say that the evolution of the FMIs and the markets in these years has been phenomenal, as has happened in so many other sectors. No? But I would summarize the whole mindset transformation in terms of we come from a monopolistic situation to a fully competitive world in terms of the securities markets and FMIs in Europe and all over the world. And this is possibly the biggest transformation that I've witnessed in terms of how you react, how you try to adapt to the new situation. A big part of that experience has been as a listed company, because BME prior to the merger with Six was a listed company, and that was part of the experience, and also the training to be able to compete on let's say on more fair grounds with the rest of markets. So that I think is a mindset that we have to navigate, and the change in attitude and the way we need to focus our people in terms of client orientation, in terms of innovation and of products, technology, so on and so forth. Because the adaptation to regulation, and RayStr is one very clear example of this situation, is a business opportunity. So sometimes regulation is tough to adapt. It's difficult to understand sometimes, but it is very often a business opportunity for clients to understand it, so we become more important for them in this respect, and also to enter into new businesses that regulation opens in this respect. And registrar and the trade repository field in Europe is a very clear example of how in this transformation and this influence of what you very well presented as the soup of acronyms, Andrew, creates a business opportunity if you are quick enough, if you get the right partners with you, and you try to obviously enter the space in the right way. And this is, I think, the success story of registrar is based upon these pillars.
And, I mean, talking about being quick and being agile, in the middle of that, you took on the role heading up the security services at Six in 2021, which is right in the middle of COVID. So that's a big transition, as well as being in the middle of a huge disruption. So, I mean, tell us more about that. How was the COVID response, and how did you keep business going as usual through such a challenging time?
I can only be very grateful to the people, to the teams and the people working in the Six Group organization, BME and Six, because this was not only a question of leadership. It was very much a question of commitment. And the fact that we have the right people working in our organizations, able to adapt to very quickly to a very difficult environment, working from home and making things happen. Good leadership always helps, and I think we had some very good leaders in our teams, both in Switzerland and Spain. But to me, the basis for that is the commitment of each and everyone who took a laptop quickly to the home and connected to the Wi-Fi and started to work. Sometimes countless hours in the beginning, to make things happen and make all processes go through. So the pandemic is, to a large extent, a people's question, a people's commitment question that I can only be very, very grateful to that. What was really something, in my case, extremely demanding was the fact that actually the transaction 6BME was announced, it was started on November 2019. It went through. The approval period in the beginning of the pandemic was approved by the Spanish government and authorities during the pandemic, finalized during the pandemic, and we started the integration work also during the pandemic. So I think everybody behaved in the right way in their respective roles as institutions, as management teams, and everything worked very well because of that at the same time. So honestly, I had to do very little from my personal point of view. I just tried to energize people and basically provide the means that were necessary for people to work. But the merit is the merit of the teams and the individuals of each organization, to be honest.
And I mean, now we're sort of coming out of that period, and yes, clearly we know there's regulatory change on the horizon, as that there always is. But as we're coming out of it, let's look now at the situation we're in regarding the acquisition of the registrar business, because this is, obviously a key component of integrating services for market infrastructure providers and for large post-trade companies. And, bringing the TR within the group is obviously a really interesting development, especially for us here on this show. So tell us more about that. What were the drivers of the acquisition of registrar for BME and obviously then the acquisition and a merger between BME and Six?
As I mentioned before, I think first of all, because we were in the business very early, in the moment that this possibility was open by regulation, we had this idea to do it, to get into the space and develop this activity. To some extent, it has always been in the DNA of any FMI, as I said before, to analyze all opportunities, and this was a clear one. The second, the very important idea in the beginning was to team up with a relevant FMI as well to try to make a bigger operation, because in this sector, as in many other industries, size is an element that is extremely important. And BME alone probably would have never been able to create a attractive train repository. And the fact that we could team up with Clearstream Deutsche Börse from the beginning was a blessing, was a really a very big opportunity to for both of us to provide a service like this. First of all, because we had the technology in BME. As you probably know that Spain is a country obsessed with registration. And if you look into what happened to the gold and silver coins recovered by the Odyssey submarine, you probably remember that. The guys that quickly took the coins out, they realized that Spain had a full dossier with the name of the captain of the ship and the names of all sailors that were registered. No? So this is this kind of obsession that in history comes from at least the Philip II kingdom. It flows into today's activities in the country and in the legislation. So we are experts in registration. We have the people, the systems, the attitude. And the Deutsche Börse had the capacity to basically market this service to a very wide number of clients. So the combination of the two of us was extremely synergetic to try to come with a competitive trade repository in Europe. No? And I think the history has proven it right, because as you know, in this moment we are leaders in Europe, and the combination of the two of us has produced a sizable, good service trade repository that I think is very important. But in this process, we also came to the conclusion that to have a single owner was possibly a good idea. Also, Clearstream Deutsche Börse wanted to focus their activities into something else. They were less, let's say, more focused into other parts of the business, less into this registration part. So we came very easily to the conclusion. After so many years of very good collaboration, we came very easily to the conclusion that a single owner would be good for the business, and at the same time that in this case, 6BME would be possibly the best owner of this operation going forward. So it was a very simple agreement on the basis of a very good, let's say, good friends, good two companies that have been collaborating for a long time in a very good manner.
And I mean, something that's been a regular topic on this show is the regulatory burden, the cost of reporting being a sort of a cost on doing business, or some market participants seeing it as a sort of a back office issue and something that they have to comply with more than something that they want to do. I mean, so how do you sort of form up a strategy for trade reporting in that space? Because obviously there has to be cost transparency. It's something that is always going to cause a little bit of tension between the fast-moving trading side of a market participant's business and their compliance side as well. And yet, at the same time, it's become so absolutely critical for managing risk across Europe. What's the strategy moving forwards for the trade reporting side of the business?
I was just going to say, Andrew, I mean, on the cost side, a couple of points. I mean, I suppose one of the things to consider, one of the things that market participants should consider is, you know, the cost of non-compliance with the regulation is going to be far, far greater. And, you know, in terms of the regulatory reporting, it's a bit of a red herring, because the market in which we operate as market infrastructure, we have to be cost related. We adhere to the fair, reasonable, non-discriminatory principles, et cetera, et cetera. So the cost per unit, the cost per transaction you report is actually small. Where the cost is, as well as I said in terms of the danger of non-compliance, where the other cost is in terms of your overheads, in terms of your exception management and that sort of thing. And this is where we go back to our previous discussions about, it's why data quality and the controls and checks you have in place are so important, because we're talking high volumes. Since 2014, we've processed more than 22 billion trades or something in that region. So, you know, having to manage exceptions, if you're a CCP or someone like that, you're potentially talking about tens of thousands of trades. So that to me is where the real cost is. It's not in the trade repository fees. It's actually the cost of ensuring that you have good data quality and you remain compliant with your obligations.
I mean, you raise a very interesting point here, actually, which is, I know something that Javier has talked about as well, which is this sort of digital maturity, digitization of the securities business. Because, of course, we've had many guests on who've talked about the benefits of getting your data quality up, because also there are benefits process-wise for the way the operation runs. And even having people on like Richard Camotto talking about how, you know, getting a good system in place can show you the value of your repo book and whether or not, you know, you've got trades that are unprofitable market participants that are difficult to work with. And I wanted to come to you on that, actually, Javier, because you have talked about the future being about digital assets. We know central banks are going to be issuing digital currencies. Now, these could be huge opportunities for market infrastructure providers, but also very disruptive as well. So what's your view of the future? How do you think we're going to move into that space?
I think it's, to some extent, it's unavoidable in the sense that there's always the technology, when technology proves to be efficient, in the end, it comes to be the new normal. So I truly believe that the digitalization of processes and securities, tokenization of new assets, is the future. Because we know by our own experience in the group with the SDX initiative, which is I think clearly from the FMI perspective ahead of the curve of the rest of the FMIs in the world. We have the most advanced digital operation here with already a formal license issued by the Swiss regulator, by FINMA. So we are clearly, I think, very well positioned. And we know the technology works and it works very well. It's very efficient. But nonetheless, we also know that the adaptation of this technology to, let's say, on a wide scale to all financial institutions, brokers, so on and so forth, is going to take some time. I mean, it's not for free. Obviously, to invest into new processes and new technology, it takes a important budgets out of every one of us. But I think the logic behind is really strong in terms of efficiency and in terms of new possibilities. So we will be there. We are already there. We are already promoting our services in this space. And I truly believe that, in general terms, this technology will help the seamless processes, probably to have a better STP processing of securities, in the sense that, for example, the introduction of smart contracts into the issuance of securities will help a lot. Everything that has to do with reconciliation, with let's say the post-trade processes that now are. They all work very well. I don't want to say this is a big problem now. No, but it's clear that the new technology will help diminish the cost, increase the efficiency, diminish the risk, and this in my opinion is going to happen across the asset classes and across processes in the industry. I am a big believer into this. What will happen probably is that we will experience a hybrid situation where for a number of years we'll probably run the two worlds. We'll have digital assets running on digital platforms and obviously the today's securities being as well running in the legacy systems. This will probably happen. And then one of the things we're working on as well is to build bridges between the two highways in the sense that we give clients optionality. So they can be digital, but at the same time, at a certain moment, shift to the, let's say, the old world or the opposite. No? So we actually give people the optionality to choose and at the same time, flexibility to look into the two possible highways going forward. So a hybrid situation, in my opinion, is going to be the normal for some years. And then eventually, I think it will be a predominance of the digital space, in my opinion.
I was actually, I think that's a very good point that Javier is making, because that was the question, he partially answered it already. So for me, what I wanted to ask Javier on his experience of opening new businesses or new challenges, what will be the most difficult or what are the main challenges of pioneering into new technology when the market is not yet ready. So if BME or SIX wants to go faster on digitalization of new products, but the market is not ready, we could come to a situation as the one he is describing, right? Of the need of the market of having this balance or this opportunity to keep using the old assets. So basically my question will be on that direction. How do you handle those, you know, tricky situations where the market is not ready, but you want to, you know, motivate the market in this regard?
Well, I think it's a question of, as I said, of optionality, no? In the sense that to be ahead of the curve, I'm with you, Barbara, that sometimes requires patience, in the sense that still the market is not ready, but you are already ready for most of the of what is required. But it gives a lot of insight into clients because we are the experts here, and therefore, for all big clients in our industry, SDX and SIX is basically the reference point, and that is in my opinion that is extremely important when something new is happening. Is who do you talk to in this industry? Who are the guys who can give you an insight into what is required, into cost, into everything that is obviously basic for the business. No? So to be, even if the market is not yet there, and I fully agree because this is the progressive thing, is extremely important to be a reference point and to be able to answer questions to people who are getting more and more ready for that. And I think this is one of the words in fashion, no? But this is a new ecosystem, no? In which different things are happening through technology towards the same direction. The cryptocurrency situation as well is one of those elements where banks have been obviously pushed into looking into how to give services to cryptocurrency investors because. Even if you don't believe in the good or beauty or not of the cryptocurrencies, your customers are doing it. And either you look into it and you see how you give services, or if you look away, obviously, as always, somebody will. And these kind of things of being, let's say, in touch with this technology also by, let's say, not the digitalization of assets, but through the blockchain wallet type of services, because your clients are already there, like in the cryptocurrency part, is also helping to move the wheel into we need to get in touch with this technology. No? So as always, clients are king, always the who actually move everything forward. And the more they use the technology in different ways, the more it pushes the whole movement to digital in a very solid way. I think this is basically how it will work. And I'm very happy to be, honestly, as a group, I'm very happy to be a very strong reference.
Yes, and continue with the discussion. I think this is one of the reasons during this year and the last year we have seen so many discussions and call for evidence from the European Commission and ESMA on digital finance, because they also want to have more information on what are the opportunities and also the risks, so they can be also ahead of these changes. And of course, there is still work to do, but yeah, in general, the European Commission, ESMA, is looking into this digital finance, and I'm sure we will all go in the same line.
I was just going to say, I think to your point as well, Laura, my view is when we look at digital and we know it's the future, it's not the future, it's happening now. And, you know, you see the technology that's coming out and we have to service our clients. I think regulation is a really important aspect of that. Because I think what we're seeing now is maybe one of the inhibitors was the lack of regulation. But as that regulation is coming in, people are becoming more and more comfortable with digital assets. You're seeing more and more investment, and that's only increasing. So the need for those solutions, the need for that technology, you know, it's increasing. And ultimately, those solutions will become cheaper as well, because as the market matures. So we're in the process of seeing that whole evolution.
In my opinion, there's no option in this. I mean, we are an FMI that is serving our client all along the value chain. So we need to be there for them in terms of solving everything that has to do with working with different assets, with the whole offering of products and services. So for us, to be in the crypto space in different manners. For example, with crypto custody services, is something that is a no-brainer. We need to give our banks and our customers solutions, because they're actually we expected. I can tell you a fact that whenever I talk to the CEOs of different banks, especially for the Spanish banks, they always ask, "What is SIX VME doing in this space? Can you would you be able to provide us with a service on this topic?" So we are expected in terms of providing high quality service, very secure, reliable. So this is what we need to do. So for us, honestly, it's a no brainer. We have to be there and to be again. With a quality service that they all value going forward.
I mean, it's a really interesting point, actually, that, you know, we often look forwards. On this show, we have a saying is that you know that you're old if you can remember going to a conference where everyone wasn't talking about blockchain technology, which I think we all tick those boxes. But I have to say that it's a very interesting space, because we know that blockchain collateral management is something that is nascent but is developing. And central bank issued digital currencies are obviously in proto sort of type development. And this we know could be huge in terms of clearing times, settlement times, addressing fails lending and various things like that. But of course, there is another side to this, which is the transition to that space. And that's something where BME and SIX have been leading recently, isn't it? Because even looking at the old-fashioned offline world, I suppose you might say, recently, BME has opened an account for its central counterparty with the Swiss CSD, so that BME clients can now settle their Swiss securities directly. This is the sort of service integration, which is a real business enabler for market participants, isn't it?
Totally. I mean, this is one of the main targets, obviously, of the integration of SIX and BME was to open up communication points of connection in order, again, to give more optionality to clients. So this was another must of the integration, was to basically do the bilateral linkage of the different parts of the value chain, including in settlement, so that we can offer clearly direct participation of our respective members of the different pieces of the value chain to one another. No? Obviously, always according to regulation. But this is it was a complete... no-brainer of an integration is to basically interact and connect all pieces of the different organizations so that we give more optionality to our clients. And this was one of the things that obviously is not easy. We cannot do it in 24 hours. You need to go through the steps of systems and regulation. But I'm super happy to see this happening. And to be honest, I think this is just the beginning. We are clearly now working as a single company, as a single organization. And this is clearly the beginning of a different future in terms of, enabling our customers to do more with us in different forms through the connection of the different things. So.
Now that Javier has touched on the migration and on the integration, I just wanted to see his perspective on how everything is evolving. Where do we stand internally, or from my perspective, that I am also participating on the migration and integration of RegisTR within SIX. I think it's already very well advanced, and of course we are learning from the BME experience, because they started before the migration and the integration, and it's almost, I will say, on BAU mode. So everyone knows where we want to go, what do we want to integrate, you know, what are the systems, everything that has to be done. But I wanted to know his opinion on where do we stand. Could we already consider that this is, you know, a question of time and that we can focus on the business itself? Or do we still need to pay, to keep an eye on the migration and the integration itself?
Thank you, Barbara. I think, first of all, again, I can only be thankful to people in terms of the spirit of taking the integration in a positive way, which is something that I feel that comes through all teams involved. So that is, I think, a very, very important thing. Second, as you say, I mean, we have obviously the experience of being a little bit ahead of of the race tier integration as a, let's say, as a whole BME into the group. I cannot promise that the process will be a walk in the park. Obviously, there are always issues that we have to solve, that people have to understand, that once you become part of a bigger group, you need to integrate, you need to go into the policies of the company. And sometimes this means more processes. This means different people who can actually obviously opine and give different insights and in so many things like everything that is corporate services like finance, risk, compliance, all these things that were raised here, was the master of his own fate, let's say, to some extent. It becomes part of a wider organization that needs the application of policies and processes, which takes time and takes effort. I'm not underestimating the effort of people in this respect. I know it very well. But at the same time, I think it's super positive in terms of what we can do after that to align, harmonize all those policies and processes are is extremely important to be together and to act as a one company. Obviously, with intention, clear intention, that the business initiative, the business innovation, also is in the hands of the raised tier people, and that we count on that big time in terms of the future development of business. The thing is that now we have a bigger machinery behind, and obviously you need to adapt to run into such a new construct. But in my opinion, the messages I get, they are all positive. The integration is progressing well. And again, I have to thank everybody involved for their attitude and the positive developments. I need that effort. We need all need that effort because, again, it's not two human organizations getting together and understanding each other. It's not something that is done on a weekend. So we need that's why the process, that's why the working streams, that's why the involvement of different groups. And I think all that is going in a positive way.
Now, sadly, we are having to come to the end of the show. Now, we're drawing the threads together here. And we have one last question to ask you, which is a very pressing one. We've asked all of our very special guests, which is the whole of Europe right now, obviously. Even the UK, after Brexit, is facing a cost of living crisis and an energy crisis. We need advice in these tough times. And we're asking all our guests the same question, which is, do you have any energy saving tips or green tips that you can share with our listeners? We've had a great many. I chase my children around the house and make sure they turn everything off after they've used it. We know Kevin De Meyer in Luxembourg has taken up a great deal more cooking. Same with Ron Finberg as well at SNP. And so this is our first opportunity to ask a very senior member of the team at the Six Group and a BME, what is your green tip for our listeners?
I didn't expect this question, to be honest. So I will tell you my gut feeling, which is always very dangerous. But my gut feeling is that I am a person from the north, and I live much better in a cold environment, which probably means that my heating will not be as high as it was in the past. This is one of the things that I'm unfortunately, this looks like one of the topics of the winter. Let's see. Winter is coming in Game of Thrones, and also winter is coming in this situation. We're going to test how resilient our countries are, our families are, each one of us are in a situation like this. No? And then we probably take a little bit of good eye into everything we do in general terms. No? Use more public transportation, more trekking on the mountains, which is my recommendation, obviously, because it's what I do. And then a little bit of understanding that this is not an easy no easy solution to this crisis, and therefore, as citizens, as employees of this company, and as families and individuals, we'll have to probably again test ourselves, like in the pandemic, you know, to some extent, test ourselves to go through a less comfortable situation in the months to come. So I don't have clearly a green tip. I have a more, if you want, an attitude tip in terms of trying to understand what we will have to go through
well, award you an official Registiar AAA ESG rating there, because you've hit all the key messages that all our ESG experts have passed on to us there. So there we go. Wise words. I also have been saying to my children, what do you need hot water for? Have a cold shower. It's the summer. And also put a jumper on if it gets chilly. That's good news. And in the meantime, that we have to end here. I can't believe we're ending on such a bizarre note. More importantly, that has been, you know, fantastic. Having you along today, Javier. So I think all we can say from everyone here at the Registiar Roundup is a huge thank you to the head of the Securities Business Unit at SIX and the CEO of BME. It is Javier Anani. Javier, thank you very much.
Actually, you are very, very pleased to be here today with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it. We are off now for another 2 weeks. Come back in a couple of weeks' time when, you know, it might actually almost be August. Can you believe it? Yes, you may be on summer holiday. Make sure you take us with you. Make sure you take us with you. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcasting app and come and join us on our LinkedIn page. That is linkedin.com/company/regis-tr, where you can find all about the new services on offer from BME and SIX. And also follow Javier and the posts he puts up there to do with the future of digitization. And from everybody here on the Registiar Roundup, in the meantime, it's goodbye. Have a safe couple of weeks. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye.
Yes, bye-bye.